Well, yesterday we began our tour of the desire world, and we were looking in the central region of the desire world, the region of feeling. And we looked at a bunch of horoscopes, maybe 10 of them, and we ended up with the horoscope of H. Ross Perot. And we looked very briefly at it, and the reason we did was because it was a good example of somebody that was very lunar and very excitable. And that's right in line with what we're trying to get at. The primary function at this stage of evolution for the desire body is to provide motivation. Motivation to participate in the evolutionary creation and get experience and take part. So that is the main reason for desire, is to motivate. We desire so that we can act, and thereby in acting we bring things to a completion, which is what the dense physical world is for. Now we said when something provokes interest, that is the basic feeling. And if we're interested in something, that starts an excitement in us. And the excitement activates one of the twin forces of the desire world. And those twin forces are attraction and repulsion. Attraction works throughout the desire world. It's the higher quality, and being higher, it's more universal, and it is to be found everywhere. Repulsion is only active in the lower regions of the desire world. Unfortunately, I didn't have horoscopes of daydreamers from the region of wishes, because not many daydreamers became famous. It's the doers who become famous. So both forces, as we saw last night in the last night's talk, both forces perform useful functions. Attraction and repulsion are both useful. However, since what is called the fall of humanity, our selfishness that plunged us deeper into material experience than we were necessarily supposed to go, and we deviated from the divine plan, we voluntarily injected discord into the cosmos. And when we did that, it's called sin. We intentionally went against the plan, not to be in, you know, to be thumbing our nose at the cosmos, but we just did our thing. We were somewhat misled, but since then, the force of repulsion is often a big part of our sinful behavior. Now, each of these two forces is activated by a specific kind of motivation. The force of attraction is activated by self-sacrificing love. And the force of repulsion is activated by selfish self-assertion. Now, the way we're looking at this is really simple. Last night we looked at a little bit more of the complexity, but we were still very simple last night. In everyday reality, this is very complicated, because we have all kinds of mixed motivations and all kinds of hidden motivations, hidden even from our own waking consciousness. And our motivations really do change rapidly, so it's hard to even keep up with some of our own desires at some time. Each of these kinds of motivational excitement have an objective. The end of self-assertion, which results in repulsion is some kind of selfish satisfaction. We selfishly want to be satisfied with the object of desire. The end of self-sacrificing, giving of love, is really joy for the other. We really love and care about the other, and we sacrifice for them. One unselfishly wants the other to experience joy. In this talk, we're going to look only at the lower desire world. We're going to look at self-assertion, selfishness, repulsion, and the lower desire world. Tomorrow, we're going to talk only about self-sacrifice, loving generosity, attraction, and the higher desire world. Now, we're going to be even more brief with the horoscopes today than we were yesterday, because we have so many to look at. And it's probably not going to have enough horoscopes, so some of you will have to share. And we're going to be dealing with a lot of mixtures and subtleties. In the talk before this talk, we used the Cosmo conception to get at the realm of feeling. We said that the whole desire body was developed in the moon period, and that there is a special resonance between the moon and the desire body, and Cancer for that matter, and feeling. In this talk, we're going to use keywords for astrology as given by Max Heindel, which happen to be the identical keywords that are used in the Cosmo conception. Before all of that, let's review some very important fundamentals about desire. Desire is object-oriented. We desire objects in one way or another. We have to have something to pin our desire on. When the feeling of interest is aroused in the region of feeling, a rapport is set up and it is activated. A rapport between the subject and the object of attention. The object of attention that got our interest. The rapport between subject and object is a two-way street. There is something from us going out to the object, and there's something coming into us from the object. The direction of the flow that we put our conscious attention to determines whether it is attraction or repulsion. So let's look at a really simple example. If someone becomes interested in an object in such a way that one puts one's conscious attention with the intent for self on the ingoing flow, the result on the outgoing flow is repulsion. That is the example that we used. It's one that I've seen since childhood. A dog with its food bowl with other dogs around. When that dog pulls that food bowl to itself, it growls and it tries to repulse every other dog. So this is an example of that. If one gives oneself intentionally to the outgoing flow, giving to the other, then on the ingoing flow in the rapport between subject and object, there is attraction. Now, if one reaches out to take something to self, that is called self-assertion. And Max Heindel tells us self-assertion is a key word of Aries, which is ruled by Mars. The result from that in the outgoing force flow is called repulsion, which Max Heindel tells us is a Scorpio keyword. And Scorpio is also ruled by Mars. Therefore, in the lower desire world, we say that Mars rules because it is the self-assertive and repulsive force. However, the manifest object or objective or the end motive for self-assertion is selfish, usually. Therefore, the end of the lower desire world is Saturn, and the very deepest regions of the desire world are Saturn. So we can say then that the two planets that are most active in the lower desire world are Mars and Saturn. We'll talk about the higher desire world tomorrow. So we're seeing in a very simple way from the keywords of Max Heindel that astrology works extremely well to determine things. We're going to look only at the simplest kind of self-assertion in these horoscopes and the simplest kinds of repulsion. Normally the self-assertion and repulsion happen instantaneously, but we're going to look at people who focus primarily in their whole life on self-assertion and not necessarily so much on repulsion. And then we're going to look at people whose selfishness had gone so far that there was a lot of repulsive force there. So we're now ready to look at some horoscope examples. Now, these are really simple, but it works more complexly. In fact, you can say that the whole quotient for self-assertion and repulsion is the strength of Mars in a horoscope, no matter whether they are as obvious of horoscopes as we have or just any horoscope. All right, now all of these charts, we're going to breeze through them really, really fast. I don't have enough for everybody here. I didn't expect nearly this many people, so you'll have to double up and share with yourselves. I'll let you decide how to double up. I'll close my eyes and watch. Remember, when you're thinking of the other person and sharing, you're being attractive in the lower desire world. All right. This is chart that most people are not familiar with the name of Robert Anderson, even though he's one of the most remarkable people in our society. If you look closely at this horoscope, there are three planets rising in Aries. So this is obviously a self-assertive horoscope. In fact, usually when you have the sun in the first house, what you have is a self-made person, especially if it's in Aries, and that's what this person was. He was educated, very well educated, but when he set out on his life, he did his own thing. He was an entrepreneur, a cattle baron, and an owner of quite a few oil companies and other businesses. He owned magazines and everything else. At one time, he owned Atlantic Richfield, and he was one of the first to strike oil on the in Alaska. What's really interesting, that when he reached out for his dog bowl, it was the biggest dog bowl in the United States. This man, I don't know if it's still true, but about 10 years ago it was still true. This man owns more land in the United States than any other United States citizen. When he got into cattle, he got into it big time. And between Texas and Mexico, he owns over 1 million acres of land. That's really self-assertion. He also owned newspapers in London and Harper's Magazine and such like that. All right. We have the Sun and Mars and Ascendant in Aries. So this is a classic of self-assertion. Whatever he wanted, he boldly reached out for it. Even if there wasn't anything there before, or if he was renewing something, people thought he was always crazy. He would just reach out and go for what he wanted, and he would go for it with such enthusiasm that he was always successful. Now, if you look, there is a very strong square between the Sun and Saturn. So in that way, this is the horoscope of somebody with a classic self-assertion. There are also squares of Saturn to Venus. So it indicates that there's probably a good deal of insecurity, emotional insecurity and self-insecurity. And one of the reasons for self-assertion often is insecurity. You're proving something to yourself. And Mars is really a prove-it-to-me sign. Let's get out and duke it out. And mano a mano, that's a really Aries kind of consciousness, and that's what we have in this horoscope. Venus conjoins the Ascendant, so he's got a good deal of culture. Another thing that he asserted himself is he has one of the largest personal art collections in the country. I suppose if you own wells in Alaska, you can afford to do that. All right, now let's quickly go on to the next one here. Because otherwise we've got so many to look at. Yes, he is. Yeah. Still pumping oil. I didn't get those details of his life. Again, this is like yesterday. We're not looking at the whole of the horoscope. We're just looking at the things that apply to our topic. And in a lot of these horoscopes, I just threw a few flingers in, just out of interest. I'm one of those people that has a well-lit desire body. I'm interested in everything, good, bad, and indifferent. And astrology allows for that. I think everybody knows who Richard Widmark is, right? All right, well, let's see. I got some introduction to him here. Let's look at the reason why we're looking at the horoscope first. Elman Bakker, in his series of books called Studies in Astrology that are sold by the Rosicrucian Fellowship, says that very often actors work out their destiny by their acting, and then they don't have to go through all of the experience. And this is why most ancient mystery schools, when they initiated people, they used drama as a tool for initiation, because people could work out their character and they could step into the character of something more noble in acting. And when they saw that, when they did that, they became something different. I participated at one time in psychodramas, and the woman who gave or presented the psychodramas did them all over. And when I participated, she had just returned from the California women's prison, and for one of her cosmic dramas, she acted out Jesus and Matthew, the tax collector. And she took the most incorrigible prisoner in the prison and had that prisoner play the part of Jesus. And so Jesus goes through the crowd and sees Matthew up in the tree and gives him recognition and such. And that was just a little scene that they enacted. Then they did it all over again. And that the prisoner that had played Jesus was just one of the people in the crowd. And in the second rendition, that prisoner got into such a haggle with somebody else over a spot on the side of the street to see that completely missed the passing of Jesus. And then in the, you know, afterwards, when they talked it all out, the prisoner was astounded at what attitude you have about yourself, how much it changes your whole experience of life, having had the experience of being Jesus and then having had the experience of being somebody who's a battler. And that's what Ellenbacher is trying to get at. This is a... So the horoscope has all kinds of make-believe in it. Richard Widmark tried to become a lawyer, but like Jack Kerouac, he got sidetracked by football. And then from football, he got sidetracked by drama. And he eventually played the role of psycho villains and tough guys and loners. Oh, what's going on, Ebenezer? Obviously, with Aries rising and the Sun conjoined to Mars, this is the horoscope of someone who has a very strong self-assertion. There's toughness, there's rugged individualism, there's rebellion, there's lonely isolation. And all of these things are indicated by the opposition to Saturn and Pluto. Pluto rules Scorpio, the sign of the rebels, and Saturn is someone who makes somebody lonely, the planet of loneliness. And so you can see that the roles that he plays are expressions of himself. Because they are oppositions and not conjunctions or squares, there's an internal division. There's an uncertainty about these things. And that means that they can be worked out in some other way. The fifth house and the 11th house are the houses that indicate the theater. Fifth house acting, in that kind of acting, the person takes the role and adjusts the role to their basic character. And this John Wayne, no matter what the role it was always John Wayne. The, the 11th house is the person loses self in the role. That's somebody like Richard Burton. Richard Burton said he acted because he could work out his artistic nature without anybody knowing who he was. He was a sneaky Scorpio type. He could lose himself and hide within the role. And in this house, in this horoscope, we see a lot going on in the 11th house. Especially, we see the classic standard, Aquarius and Uranus there. Now, Uranus is the planet of sublimation, which is a special form of grace which allows one to go the opposite direction from intuition. Intuition comes in as grace from the life spirit, but in sublimation, you go from this world up into the world of life spirit to be renewed. And so if anybody's going to sublimate, it's going to be somebody with a horoscope like this. And the planets in this horoscope, Jupiter is in a sextile trine with Mercury and Saturn, relieving that, and Uranus is in a sextile trine with the Sun, Mars, and Pluto, roughly speaking. So this is a really good example of seeing self-assertion, but seeing self-assertion worked out through sublimation. All right, let's look at another horoscope. In this horoscope, we see another actor who is dealing with selfish self-assertion, but who is also uncertain about it, and therefore ripe for working it out other ways. Again, Aries is rising, In this time, Uranus is almost close to the enough to be called a conjoined to the ascendant, and James Coburn is another one of those guys who played a tough guy, and he played all kinds of tough guys, from cowboys to spies to high action figures in war scenes and things like that. And he even played comedy roles, but when he played comedy roles, he was the tough guy in the comedy roles. When I lived in Oceanside, James Coburn was the big thing, and they just played his movies again and again because all the Marines were on their way being shipped out to Vietnam, and they were all big on James Coburn. It fit right into their life. At the Saturn-Mars, in this case, the opposition, Mars ruling the ascendant again, is a classic of self-assertion repulsion, only in this case, the self-assertion, he's again not certain about it. He's not at all certain about himself because he has, he's negative about himself. He was almost crippled at one time from rheumatoid arthritis. And he brought himself back out of that by becoming a health food person and doing a lot of prayer and meditation and that sort of thing. The Saturn and Mars form a T-square with the Sun. So this shows that, like all forms of arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis is usually a very specialized kind of negativity. Not negative about everything, but just in certain special areas. But it's an autoimmune disease. And an autoimmune disease is one that is the result of a little bit of hatred. Saturn is always prominent, especially in parallels, when there is an autoimmune disease. In this case, again, we have somebody who works out his self-hatred and his difficulties that he has about self-assertion. He works it out again through Uranus, and he gets relief through sublimation. It is nearly conjoined the ascendant, and it sextiles and trines Saturn and Mars, and that gives that kind of opportunity again. Opportunity to sublimate the qualities of self-assertion and the repulsive internal attitudes that come with it. The next chart, I just threw in, it's going to be very little that we're going to say about it. And it's just a sentence or two. Yes, one hand he never got back. He got everything back but one hand. He used to do a lot of interesting things. He used to do gong meditation. He had a huge, big gong, and he would hit the gong, and he would follow the sound as it would reverberate out and get more and more and more faint, and he used that as a way to lead him into the subtlety of the ethers. It's quite an interesting man. Just a very few brief comments. We have here, I didn't have any female self-assertion horoscopes, and so I decided to put one in just so that the women wouldn't feel left off, that they can elbow just as well as anybody else can. And this is... this is a non-Aries self-assertion. It isn't a highly self-assertive, but she was a brilliant person. And she worked out her self-assertion in irony and sarcasm. Very, very bright. Together with Robert Benchley, they formed a group called Park Bench, Parker and Benchley. And they wrote all kinds of really humorous kinds of things. They were the head of that group that formed the New Yorker magazine, that big round table. They made a movie about it a few years ago, the big round table in the hotel there in the Algonquin Club. Yes. Okay. And she was tried to be an idealist, but wasn't a natural idealist, and all of her irony and her mental self-assertion got her into trouble. She was a political idealist, and she was very outspoken about a lot of issues. She was anti-fascist, clearly, during the Second World War, and she was a pretty strong leftist writer. And along came Joe McCarthy, and because she had at one time belonged to the Communist Party, she got blackballed. And she never did anything else again. I think the blackballing has something to do with the 12th house, 12th and 7th house with the Saturn polarity there. She never did much of anything else in life. She died a lonely, bitter person because even her friends didn't want to be around her because she was so vitriolic and she was outspoken about anything and everything. If you had the least little thing wrong about you, she lashed out at you. That's obvious. You should maybe have her in the repulsion part rather than in the self-assertion part. And she died, and when she died, the small fortune that she had, she gave every penny to Martin Luther King. So the self-assertion is obviously the Mars conjoined the Sun, and the conjunction is Virgo, so it is probably as much mental as it is emotional. It has sort of a bludgeoning quality about it also because of the aspects to Pluto and Jupiter. Like, it's not enough to be sarcastic, but she had to go overboard with the sarcasm and sort of bludgeon the person with, the ball of knives or something like that. The main reason that this horoscope is in here is just to show that self-assertion works in very various different ways. All right. I have some mystery horoscopes in here that I hope somebody else can solve because I can't solve them. So you'll all have to help me out. No, I'm not joking. Now we go through a series of horoscopes that nobody knows the people. Therefore, I can say anything and get away with it. This is the horoscope of a Nobel laureate. The field of physics that I had my career in as a techno flunky was high energy physics. And in high energy physics, you would expect that you would find a large number of Aries people. And this is one of the biggest Aries people. Sun conjoined Mars in Aries and the Ascendant in Aries and Uranus in Aries. This is really a self-assertion. Carlo Rubbia is at the Harvard University, and the groups that I worked with collaborated with him, though I never spoke with him. He wouldn't speak to flunkies. You could pass him in the hallway or things like that. But he is a very brash man and very flamboyant. If you want to hear a Carlo Rubbia Aries story, one of the professors that I worked with was also trying to get a Nobel Prize. And this was when Fermilab was first being built, the huge, big accelerator. And they were down where they were in the foundations of an experiment that they shared together. It was the first experiment at Fermilab. And they were plotting out with formulas and everything their strategy that they were going to have. And they were using magic markers and writing it all on the wall. And then they decided, we can't let anybody know our plans. They're cloak and dagger about to got a blowtorch off and burned it off the wall. Surely it was Carlo Rubbia. This is a blowtorch kind of horoscope. He's obviously self-assertive and not especially selfish because Saturn has a fairly decent disposition in this horoscope. It shows a good horoscope for a scientist because Saturn and Uranus are the two co-rulers of Aquarius. Saturn is the side of science that collects the data, and Uranus is the one that comes up with the insights into what the data means. I only want to make one point about this horoscope, and that is high energy physics is done by taking particles and revving them up to very high energies and very high velocities and then smashing them into other atoms or other particles. In fact, the latest thing is they get two particles wound up going in different speeds, and then they have them collide with each other, and then there's an even bigger bashing. And so what happens is when one atom bashes into another, everything splits apart, and then they pick up the pieces, like in thousandths of a second, and from the way the pieces fall out of the hole, they have an idea into the hole. And this is that kind of a chart. This is a bash-bash chart. This is really self-assertion. Now, biblically, we're going to talk about it tonight. We're going to talk about the fall of humanity. And in the fall of humanity back in Lemuria, we preemptively self-asserted ourselves, Aries, and we took the creative force, the sexual energy, into our hands, which was the seed ground of repulsion, and we were in ignorance about what we were doing. And the consequence of that is the repulsion that we know of as consciousness of death. And since then, the consciousness of humanity has been deathly. If we want to know how something works, there's a dog story and a horse's story are two short stories by Mark Twain. And they're anti-vivisection short stories. And they show you the brutality and the stupidity of our deathly kind of science. If they want to see what does this nerve do, we'll cut it and see whether the dog can walk after that. We have to break things apart. We have to destroy things. Our science is deathly. And even the atoms, we have to blast them to bits to know what's going on inside of them. That's about as much as I have to say. This is an example of self-assertion that is tremendously destructive in order to advance science. This is the mystery chart. It's again somebody that nobody knows, not even me. And I suspect that this person may very well be a victim of propaganda. This is the horoscope of Ezio Tartantelli. And everybody knows Ezio Tartantelli. Yeah. No, you didn't have lunch with him last week or today or any other time. This is the horoscope of a terrorist. Or an alleged terrorist. But not of the Islamic variety, but in the very flamboyant Italian leftists. Now they have had leftist presidents even. They've persisted. But this man, I believe, was convicted as a terrorist. And I don't see a terrorist in this horoscope at all. We see a very self-assertive man. Aries is rising. And Mars is in Aries in the first house, and it conjoins the moon. He's surely an enthusiast, but it seems to me very unlikely that he would get carried away in his enthusiasm because both of these planets are trying to the sun. And Saturn, which we've been seeing as the selfish one, is trying to Neptune. So I don't see this person as a terrorist. And if you can dig into the horoscope, you know, he might have just been a fall guy. Maybe he belonged to the party, but I'm not sure that he did anything really terroristically. I don't even have all of the data on what he was accused of, because I did searches on the web and I couldn't even find, couldn't bring anything up on him. So you've got a horoscope to do some studying on. All right, we're now starting to pass away from the self-assertion to self-assertion going into repulsion. Yes. And he was convicted on that. Busted him. Oh, so he was set up. See, and you told me that. See, you solved it for me. And he's still in prison. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. This is the horoscope of an artist. And an artist who is trying to work out the problems of good and evil through art, but he also did it in his life. This is the horoscope of Charles Baudelaire, who wrote a book that was banned in its time. It's really considered pretty tame. It's called Flowers of Evil. And he's a pretty extreme guy. I read parts of Flowers of Evil to Daisy, and she was repulsed by the title, but we found very lovely poems in there, and I got a copy if any of you want to do an in-depth study of Flowers of Evil and Charles Baudelaire. This is strange. In his life, he had an extremely intimate Oedipal relationship with his mother. It was not sexual, but they were overly intimate. And because of that, he had a hard time identifying himself and knowing himself. The sun is square to the moon, and the moon is a big, strong mother figure. And so you can see there's the ambivalence from the square, and his not knowing himself was another thing. He came from a strange background. His father was a debauched priest, and he married his mother after he was defrocked. I believe he was a child of a union that took place before there was a marriage. And after the death of the father, the mother married a career diplomat. And the career diplomat believed in using martial discipline, military discipline. And Charles Baudelaire rebelled against that. And he spent all the rest of his life rebelling. He struggled with good and evil in many ways. He was both a Catholic and a Satanist. He was a debauchee. He loved the naughty ladies, but he was also a mystic. And he had all kinds of struggles back and forth between the two of them. He was a cynical sensualist, but he longed for purity. And he's an extremely divided man. He was addicted to opium, and he was addicted to ether. And he was sexually morbid. And this is a long time ago. This is in the early part of the 19th century. He dyed his hair green. And he was sort of a fop. He would wear especially elegant clothes, but his statement was he preferred street women who were dirty. uh, Yeah, it's a real extreme kind of thing. This is not the most extreme chart we're going to look at. And he has Pluto conjoined Mercury. And that's an aspect that likes to dumbfound people, and they even stump themselves, and they produce all kinds of mind boggles. And he would talk to people, and he would intentionally use non sequiturs. You'd be talking to him, and he'd be saying something completely odd, and he did it intentionally. He eventually died a horrible death from, because he eventually did go insane. He had syphilitic insanity, and he did write, even in the latter stages of the syphilis, he wrote some beautiful, beautiful poetry. I was tempted to bring up the book out of the library in the basement and read some of his good poetry so you can see that something beautiful can come out of. There's plenty of selfish self-assertion in here with the moon, the mother, focused against the planets in the eighth house, the sun and Saturn and Aries, all kinds of self-assertion. Five planets in Aries. That's really strong self-assertion. There's all kinds of twisted passion, and it's twisted passion that is blocked. There's to do with the Mars and Venus, self-assertions through passion and sexuality, but they're square to the two most psychological planets, Neptune and Uranus. So this is all kinds of weirdness here. Saturn and Capricorn represent darkness, and Aries certainly represents bright light. So we have all kinds of struggles in several ways between the sun and the moon, between darkness and light, light and darkness, and between Mars, Venus, and the planets in Capricorn. So what his life was actually the struggle of self-assertion. And this is a funny thing. This is why being object-oriented about desire is so important. Because if you get fetched with desire and you keep your attention on an object of desire, you're going to con yourself into doing it. It's something that, one of the funniest moments of my life was like that. Jack Benny was on stage with the Marquis Chimps, and they were all dressed in polo shirts. And the Marquis Chimps would all do something, they'd do an act, and then Jack Benny would do it. And all at once, in the middle of the skit, one of the Marquis Chimps gets up off. They're all sitting in these little tiny chairs. You see the little chimp sitting there, and then you see Jack Benny sitting there with that, that smile he would get on his face. And all of a sudden, one of the Marquis Chimps gets up and walks around the stage and finds a hole in the stage that they use for prompting and things like that. And it bent down and looked in the hole, and it went back to its chair, and it sat down. And the next one got up and wandered around, and it went to the hole. And then the third Marquis Chimp got up and walked around, and it went to the hole. And then the camera focused on Jack Benny. And he sat there with that nervous look he would get on his face, and the crowd was roaring. This was in the early days when I watched television. I was living with my parents, and all of us were just about on the floor with laughter. And Jack Benny never did a thing, and there's all this tension in the air, but he was psyched out. And if you have an object in your attention, you're going to do it. It takes an enormous power to overcome the rapport between subject and object in desire. And Jack Benny couldn't overcome it. And Jack Benny gets up and he walks over and looks in the hole, and then the whole place just breaks up. It's pretty far away from Baudelaire, but we do see you see what it is. He has a moral block. He has a moral block because he can't get his weird, twisted attention off the object of his desire. Okay. They used to use ether as an anesthesia. Like, for example, I had my tonsils out when I was a child. And we all the kids, we told each other, because it was the fad then to get your tonsils out. And all the kids told each other, look for the pinwheel when they give you the ether. Because ether doesn't act real suddenly as an anesthesia, and you go out slowly, and sometimes you get a glimpse into the inner worlds, but you get addicted to it, and you do see the vortex in the center of the forehead in the desire body as you're going out, and so Charles Baudelaire was just addicted to that whole feeling of going out with the ether. And then when he needed to rest, of course, it was a great comfort to be able to have opium there.
This has got to be one of the hardest charts though that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
10 squares.
Yeah. Man, we're talking almost 2 centuries ago and somebody dyeing his hair green. Can you imagine 2 centuries ago what the world would think if you were dyeing your hair green? Yes, I have had them. I've had every degree. No, those are things of pressure on the optic nerve. It's either the optic nerve or the retinal field, one or the other. They get projected out. I've had migraines that severe. I have not had the deepest degrees of migraines. The deepest degrees of migraines are you go blind for a few minutes. Yeah, I've never had that happen. I've even heard of people passing out from migraines, like fainting.
Yeah.
All right, this is a horoscope that we're using in our intermediary astrology class, which is taking about 7 years to get through. This is the horoscope of a robber baron who made hundreds of millions of dollars over a century ago, when the dollar meant a lot more. At one time, he owned the entire Erie Railroad, the Union Pacific, the Kansas Pacific, all the elevated trains in New York, several newspapers, Western Union, and a string of other companies. He's very, very rich. He was also very cunning and conniving. He has that Mercury trine Saturn, which he uses to serve the desire world. But we'll come to that in just a minute. When he owned the Erie Railroad, he kept the books of the Erie Railroad in his mind. Both sets, the honest one and the dishonest one, he kept in his mind. He was really a scoundrel. He was an investor, but he was much more a speculator. We're looking at the 5th and 11th houses in this horoscope. The Aries component in this horoscope is small, but the self-assertion is an extremely strong, less than a half a degree opposition between Mars and Saturn. And in that, the Saturn part is predominant. It's extremely, extremely selfishness, strong in that way. And he's ruthless. Even his own friend, who was his collaborator, named Jim Fisk, who is symbolized very perfectly by Mars in Taurus, who is a real flamboyant guy, and he got involved with a murder in a crime of passion, and Jay Gould just undercut him and just cheated him out of all of his own money. In a way, people hate Red China or something like that. The United States used to hate Jay Gould that much because he was such a ruthless man, and he got this is a man that he had a battle with Cornelius Vanderbilt, and he just kept printing stock as fast as the printing press would go and sold watered down stock, and Vanderbilt kept buying it, and then there was a big legal case over it, and he had a pet judge. Both of them had a pet judge, but they couldn't get it in their venue, so they had a law passed. And both of them went with suitcases of money to Albany. And they went back and forth. And Vanderbilt, being something of a gentleman and not at all as ruthless as Jay Gould, Eventually, he says, "I can't spend that kind of money." And you know, like it was thousands of dollars, many thousands that they openly passed out to the legislators. They were going back and forth because Vanderbilt and Jay Gould were in the same hotel on different floors, and Jay Gould won that one. All right, what we're looking at here is somebody. This is somebody who's very, very mental, but the desire nature is out of hand. Tonight we're going to talk about the coalescence between the mind and the desire body. And this is a perfect example of it. What happens is the two planets in the second house, Jupiter and Venus, are square to the moon. And this shows an extreme, unbounded greed and the ruthlessness of the self-assertion and repulsion that drove everybody else off was the Saturn-Mars. So the desire nature in this planet, in this horoscope, is really strong, and the mind is even stronger, but the mind isn't used to curb the desires. The mind is used to serve the desires. And he might say to himself, with those planets in Cancer in the second house, "Well, I'm just investing for my family," or something like that. No, it was greed. He eventually was so materialistically selfish that he died of tuberculosis. All right. Now we hang on to our hats because we start looking at horoscopes where self-assertion has been carried so far as to become repulsion. It was repulsion, but not like repulsion like we're going to see in the next three or four charts. I have to speed up, though, because we're taking awfully long here. This is one of the more repulsive figures in our time, Charles Manson. Yes, Charlie Manson. We're looking now at Saturn-Mars afflictions carried to the nth degree. Now, this is a really interesting chart because there is attraction in this chart as much as repulsion. He has Taurus rising, and there's something attractive about him. And he has Mars conjoined Neptune, which is a kind of charisma. But it's a kind of charisma that you can become fascinated and carried away with evil. The Mars-Neptune in his horoscope indicates an almost hypnotic kind of charisma that he had. The Sun and Venus and Jupiter and Mercury are all in Scorpio. The Sun-Venus, again, has an attractive, a repulsive kind of attractive quality to it. And so he can attract people to him, and he forms coalition. Coalitions. He works in a gang. And the repulsiveness is not only Scorpio, but it is the squares to Saturn. And he might even think that these people that are following him, he can even fool them into thinking that this may be some kind of altruistic thing that they're doing. The position of Pluto in all of this, that the Pluto is square to Mercury, indicates that prejudice was behind the whole thing of Helter Skelter. He was trying to provoke an incident that would produce a backlash against African Americans when he did the Helter Skelter thing. Pluto also squares Uranus. So the open-mindedness is not open in this person. All right. What? The hit comes from the Sun square Saturn. It's extremely repulsive. He hated anyone because he was insecure about his ability to love. This is probably the most violently repulsive person that we're going to look at. in the Carlo Rubia chart when we looked at that. Hang on to the charts if you can, and if you really need a set, I can print a set out. The Sun, Mars, and Uranus were conjoined, only there it was all self-assertion. In this one, Sun, Mars, and Uranus are, again, the most dynamic of all of the planets, and in this case, they are repulsively focused. This is the chart of Vito Genovese, who for many, many years was the head or the don of the Genovese mafia crime clan in New York City. He was the kind that was involved with racketeering and violence for sale. He was behind many murders and participated in many murders. He was in prison for 15 years, and he was still having murders carried out at his order when he was in... Sun and Mars are in Scorpio in the first house, and that's the signature of self-assertion carried out to repulsion. The way the Scorpio consciousness works, it's more than just a destructive, let's have a big smash like Aries rising in Carlo Rubia. This is you destroy anything that gets in your way. You eliminate anything that gets in your way. It's utterly repulsive. In the lower desire world, the purpose for its existence is to dissolve desire forms, to get rid of them. It's recycling. I suppose Vito Genovese, if you talk to him, he says, I'm just recycling people. You know, it would probably... people like that are so violent and so repulsive that they can't say what they really do because, you know, they have to be euphemistic. The interesting thing about the chart is that they had a really hard time catching him. Saturn conjoins Mercury, which shows a paranoid kind of caution. He could be cautious in such a way that it was hard to nail him. And those planets are sextile to Jupiter, so he had a lot of friends that stood by him, even in... Even with all of his violence, and so it was very hard to nab him. I'm not sure everybody knows the next person that we're going to look at.
No vacillations
about anything. He just went out there and did people in. And it would be violent. See, this is the chart of a real terrorist. This is, you know, if you are the mafia gets its reputation by doing a few really violent acts, and then everybody comes into line because they don't want that to happen to them. All right, this is somebody that shares the same birth date, but fortunately not the same year as the person doing the speaking. This is a man who is a brilliant photographer. He was. He's no longer alive. And he was a brilliant filmmaker. But he was repulsive. And he was outrageous. He's the one that just about gave Jesse Helms a conniption fit right in the court. They were having congressional hearings on the National Endowment for the Arts. And they brought some of Robert Mapplethorpe's work into Congress, and one of the pieces they brought in was a crucifix in a beaker full of urine. I told you, this class is only for the brave. He was, obviously he threw off his Catholicism with a lot of vigor. He was famous for doing nudes, males and females, and they were very impressive the way he handled light. He started up in his life being straight, and he ended up being a homosexual. And he started out pretty much as a vanilla guy, and he ended up being very, very exotic. He hung out in a place that I visited once, just to visit it. I had a friend that was a waiter there. It was in Maxis, Kansas City. You've been to Maxis, Kansas City, haven't you? No? You've heard of it? Yeah. It's quite a place. It's where Andy Warhol and all of those kinds of people, the kitchen people, hung out. And Robert Mapplethorpe was so good, and the rich liked the quality of his work, that for to sit for a photograph, you could charge. He would charge $10,000, and he would get it. But what happened is, like Baudelaire, he discovered that he had a taste for sin. And the Jupiter conjoined the Sun shows a revelment in sin. And the Saturn and Pluto, which square them from the 10th house, shows that he used to love the power that he had. And he realized that there was power in sexuality, and there was power in celebrity. And so this is where his mind started going really crazy. As he got into homosexuality, he did a lot of what was called art photography, which was actually homosexual pornography. He was a caprophiliac, and if you want a definition, you'll have to ask somebody else. Caprophiliac. Caprophiliac. That means somebody who likes a lot of excrement in the sexual activity. Yes.
Question. If this is Sun conjoined Jupiter in a different sign, does not cause the same thing.
No.
Correct?
No. This is a character that has gone to the extreme of repulsion. And he was a racist, because Jupiter is almost exactly square to Saturn. But he loved to be sinful with what he called his primitive black men. And so even if he was a racist, I won't go that far. He was a pretty vicious guy. I'll leave it to your imagination. And this is somebody that the Jupiter Sun in Scorpio not only indulged in sin, he indulged in remorse. And when a person indulges in remorse, the word for that is guilt. And he loved being guilty. This, because the Sun is square to Saturn and Pluto, there's an enormous amount of self-hatred in all of this. And what the things that he hated most in life, he put on himself because he hated them so much. He died of AIDS. And AIDS is an acquired immunodeficiency, which is altogether different than an autoimmunity deficiency. An acquired immunodeficiency is you pick it up from the outside world. And the people who get AIDS, like if you can remember all the way back to your childhood, the people who were most hated in our society were the homosexuals and the drug takers. And those are the people who took on the hatred of society, and taking on the hatred of society is manifest as an acquired immune disease.
I know you don't want to get too technical, but the question.
Yep. No, it would be probably manifest in a different way, though. It would probably, there might be something like a male prostitute or something like that. Yeah. I don't know what to say about that. I only looked for the simplest things to show repulsion. Yeah. This is the horoscope of one of the most hated people and one of the most repulsive people in history. What?
What?
We're, That's tomorrow. See, we're studying the desire world, and we're studying the principle of repulsion. We're not trying to ourselves revel in desire, but I'm just trying to give extreme and clear examples of showing that these are exact usages of Max Heindel's keywords, and that's what I did when I looked for the charts. I have a data bank of 50,000 horoscopes, and I just took the things, yes, of famous people, and I just took the things that Max Heindel would say were associated with self-assertion, and then I took the things that he would say would be associated with repulsion, and I put them in, and these are, there were a lot of other horoscopes, but these were the ones who were most famous for repulsiveness. This is one of the most hated people in history. He was a French nobleman. That's why he has the name Marquis. And he had a very normal upbringing. And he had a normal marriage. But what happened is he started cheating on his wife. And what's interesting in looking at these horoscopes, people start out so straight, and then they get hooked on sin. And they get hooked on desire. And that's what happened. He started cheating on her. And then he started a string of all kinds of infidelities with prostitutes and actresses and courtesans and even people in nobility. But this is somebody that no longer got excitement out of vanilla sex. And so he did all kinds of brutal things, so that what we now call sadism is taken from his name, Marquis de Sade. And he was able to carry this on for years, even though he was a governor. And eventually, though, he just carried it so far that he just rent his soul apart. And he died insane in an insane asylum. So we see the Scorpio ascendant, which indicates both cruelty and repulsion. We see that Mars is again square to Saturn, the two planets that rule the desire world. And again, it's somebody who is insecure and maybe starts off trying to prove himself with regard to sex. Mars is square Saturn and Venus. So he gets involved with that. And it's another person with the sun square moon, and there is ambiguity. And this is the answer to Jerry's question. Yes, this is somebody that has the sun square Jupiter in a strong affliction that does carry the indulgence out to extremes, but it certainly probably was not the same extreme in the same way as Robert Mapplethorpe. So there's all kinds of repulsive desire, and in this case, he wrote about it. And when, you know, there's only, as Max Heindel says, there's only so much sex you can do, but you can think about it an infinite number of times, and that's what he did. And he wrote pornography, especially brutal pornography. And there are people that think that this is art, that is really artful writing that he does. All right, we have one last horoscope to look at. I didn't want to end up with that much negativity, so I thought I'd show a positive example of repulsion. Yes. We'll not be looking at a personal repulsion, though there is personal repulsion in the horoscope. He was a little obsessed with cleaning potties, which indicated that he had his own kind of guilt things. But what we're interested in as an impersonal repulsion. Scorpio is rising, and the two co-rulers, Mars and Pluto, are in opposition to each other. And they're part of an enormous T-square that takes in most of the planets. 6 of the 10 planets are in the T-square. Five of the 10 planets. Venus, Mars, Moon, Jupiter, Pluto are all part of a gigantic T-square. Now, So there is a lot of repulsion in this chart. And it was enough repulsion to repulse the British out of India. This was done with a number of things. Instead of trying to deliberately produce riots did happen, but we'll come to that in just a little bit. And instead of trying to forcefully throw the people out, he tried to do it by applying love. And one of the tools he used was non-cooperation. And non-cooperation is a way of effecting repulsion. The normal interaction I would have with you, when I become uncooperative, I take that normal action and pull it back home. Just the way all forms are dissolved in the lower desire world, where you take back home your own sins and you're cleansed of them in purgatory, the same thing happens. So when he withdrew cooperation with the British altogether, the British were powerless. And since everything is in the first house, he threw their guilt right in their face, because every time he did this, the people became powerful and there were riots, and the British even harmed people who were unarmed and not doing anything wrong at all. And this was for all the world to see. So he put a guilt trip on the British and repulsed them. Now, he thought all of his activities were a failure. And he thought all of his activities were a failure because he never got the people to love enough to not act riotously. But what he was trying to do was probably an impossibility. You can't not cooperate and pull your cooperation away without producing repulsion. And when repulsion sets in, then there are going to be riots or social breakdowns and things like that. And even though his intent, what he wanted to do was have a loving non-cooperation, the very fact that non-cooperation is the way you activate repulsion shows that he was trying to do something that was basically impossible, and he never ever would have succeeded. I have a set here if anybody wants a set of the charts. Let's close with the student's prayer. O God, increase our love for thee so that we may serve thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength. So